going to start Be'ez Hashem question and answers in the camp pass. And I open the floor to questions. Yes, Josh. Yes. So toilet paper is in the table of Sorech. One is allowed to tear lekavod abrios because not having toilet paper is a concern of kavod abrios. You should know that Rav Nevin Sal Shlita holds that anytime you tear something, you have to. If there is, the intention is not to get at something, but rather is to separate two things, he holds that the shaila of mechatef, cutting down the size. Most folks can say that mechatef means that if you cut on the lines, you want a specific size. But if you don't cut on the, when I say lines, I mean perforation. But if you don't cut on the perforations, that's not called mechatef. But Nemzal does not hold this way. Nemzal holds that mechatef is any time, if I want to divide this paper in half, even if I don't care whether it's exactly half or third, then by definition that's mechatef. So Rav Nevinzal holds that one should tear toilet paper, even in a tzorach, with a shinui, and it's mutter the kavod abrius. But he does not hold that one. Most folks can say if the toilet paper wasn't cut beforehand, one should cut the toilet paper on the non-perforated part. Because the perforated part qualifies mechatef. Rav Nevinzal says he thinks even if it's not on the perforation, it's mechatef. However, what do? You do it with a shinui in the case of where if it was forgotten to cut toilet paper. Yes, Avraham. You know what? We need to put out a new edition. I forgot about the diapers. Oh, that's a good one. We forgot about diapers. So, in regards to diapers, you're asking about putting on or taking off? Okay. Okay, so Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa has an interesting heter, Bidi Avad, he allows for someone to take off the stickies on a diaper. Let me try to show you, we have no diapers here to visualize, but show and tell, huh? So, Let's say this part over here, let's do it this way. These things are attached by a sticky, like, I don't know how you describe it, tape, right? And what you do is you take them apart to be able to use the diaper, and then you attach it again. Oh, it's called, I got the English word, adhesive, right? So you separate the adhesive, and then you put it back. So if Shlomo Zalman is bothered, why is that not considered korea? Rav Shlomo Zalman held, this is how we pass in La Halacha, Rav Shlomo Zalman held that an adhesive is the same thing as tofer. Tape is tofer. Attaching tape on Shabbos is a shayla d'oraita of tofer. So what's going to be in that regard? So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, since when the manufacturer did it, he knew that you were going to take it off, and he has a whole long cheshbon. He says that separating it might not be an issue d'oraita, hence you're allowed, first step is okay, you're allowed to take the adhesive off. Now to put the adhesive back on, so now you've separated, put over the leg, and here, imagine if my belt was the top of the diaper, so then you put it back on, so, but wait a second, what about doing, so that would be korea to take it apart. What about to put it back together again? That's tofer. Right? Nowadays, we have a new form of sewing, and that's called tape. So how are you allowed to put a diaper on Shabbos? So the answer is that most kids, and if an adult needs a diaper, they use the diapers for less than a 24-hour period. It's not going to, it's not meant to stay on. Therefore, you're allowed to do that adhesive, and then you're allowed to take it off. However, here's a collector's item, Rabotai. Think about this one. You might have never thought about it. God willing, Rick, to show you have children, you'll think about this many times. If you're allowed to think about learning when you're changing a diaper. When you put the adhesive, when you throw out the diaper, are you allowed to put the adhesive back on? Before you throw it out. The answer is that might be kosher. Because there, you want it to last. When you put it on your kid, you know he's not going to wear it past 24 hours. The sheer pro kayama is 24 hours. When you take it off, that's also going to be permissible because it was never put on to be shel kayom. It's not korea. But if you're going to put it back on before you throw it out, that might be a shayla of what? A doraisa. So therefore, it's recommended that you're allowed to put on a diaper, you're allowed to take off a diaper, but when the diaper is ready to be thrown out, don't attach the adhesive again, because if you do, that might be tofer min hatorah. I saw there were a bunch of other hands before. Yes?
So when you puncture the hole in the barn with your hand, that would actually also
be so you according to this approach, by the way, there are some rabbeim that are not into it, but according to what I'm suggesting, what I think is the best approach is to puncture it and then open the top and then discard the contents. That's the most, in B'Sha'at HaTchas, that's the most ideal way of dealing with it. Again, this is the way I suggest that it be done. If you, let me explain. I didn't spell out why that's so. The reason it's so is because of the following. What is a metal can? How is a metal can made? A metal can is made by having a metal base with the food put inside with walls, and then there's a metal that's heated onto the top. Am I correct about that? That's how it's made. I believe that's how metal cans are made. When you open up the metal can, some say that you just made a clean. However, if you make the clean non-functional before you start by puncturing the hole, and then you open up the top, then it could be then you've not made a clean. And for if you want to get everything, if you empty out all the contents and you immediately throw out the clean, then you're showing for sure that you're not interested at all in the clean. Hence, there's room to make a yes, Chaim.
Would you be allowed to puncture on top?
No. No, because then you might very well have a functional cleat. If it's impossible to do, then ask the rav. It could be that b'shas hatzach that you could do another way, but it wouldn't solve it because we want to make the cleat not functional, and then when you're opening up, you're not making a cleat at all. But yes, there are times that it might be difficult to do it based on what's inside, based on whether you have something to catch the material and so on, depending on the extent. I was waiting for questions about, you know, the rodent camp and I was waiting for those types of questions. Okay, well, we'll get to them, I would imagine. It's only a finite amount of Hilchos Shabbos. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Why can't we take out a stone on Shabbos and put it on top of the day? Well, we didn't go to the locker then. People, they tore around the shore and they didn't see the floor. What do you guys do? People are
going to come. Okay. Fill in Hilchos Muksa. I remember that when I was in learning in the Kollel in Yitzchak Elchanan Hilchos Shabbos, Rabbi Willa gave a whole long chabura about what the halachos of fill in are vis-a-vis Muksa. It's a very, very complicated sugya. Bottom line is that if the tefillin, if you don't need to move it, you should treat tefillin as muksa. And some of you might know there are different types of muksa. There's muksa machmas gufo. If you have a rock, you're not allowed to move it at all. If it's a kli shemalachto le'isser, if it's a hammer that's used for prohibited actions on Shabbos, that you're allowed to move l'tzorech gufo u'mekomo. The question is, what way are you allowed to move tefillin? How do you look at tefillin? There are different opinions in this regard. Bottom line is, we treat tefillin as muktzeh achmas gufo, and it should not be moved. However, if the tefillin is anyway going to be in danger, then you're allowed to move it. And if in any way what will happen is the tefillin will lead to zilzul, will come to zilzul, then one should pick up the tefillin and move it to a safe. Same place. But lechatchila, we do not move filling at all. Yes? By the way, if you take a look at Rabbi Penner's booklet, you have it there? Thank you. He there gives a summary in the back of Rafita, which was one of the reasons that... No? Does he? Yes. Showering and bathing. There he gives a summary. There are a few issues. Number one, was the water heated up on Shabbos? So that is a problem. If a guy is available, so then in such a case, in case of a camper, and this would happen when I was in camp often, we would ask the guy to turn on the hot water, and then in such a case, for a cholesh embo sakana, then one would be allowed to wash the camper. Keep in mind that when the individual here is being dried, not to squeeze out the water in his here, okay? So bottom line is that if a camper is very much soiled, then you can give them a shower on Shabbos. We do not, there's an Isser Midrabanan of Rechita on Shabbos, but keep in mind there are two issues. We're make on the Isser Rechita if the camper is, if a chola is dirty, but at the same time, keep in mind that turning on the hot water, when you turn it on, might turn on the boiler. Hence, the best thing is to have the Gentile turn on the hot water. Yes, Natan.
If you're seeing a riot from two kids, taking up the temple can right at my kids, they should be able to open up.
Some try to discuss that. Most poskim don't accept that. But there's not her time. The Rav needs has shear now. The Rav has shear here now. Okay. Okay. So we'll then wrap up. What do you know? What time the shear start? Okay. Go ahead. Ariel. So first of all, I don't consider myself high enough in Madrega to give advice. And the reason for that is because I myself was never a counselor in Hask. I came to Hask not as a counselor, I came to school with my wife. And then eventually I started learning with the counselors, and when people asked me questions, I answered questions when there was no one around. But myself, I didn't survive as a counselor. I think what the counselors do is something that's amazing. I do have a lot of experience, though, there. In 8 years in counseling counselors over there, what I found is that the first 3 or 4 days are murderous. Those are very, very, very hard days. You can't believe what hit you. But if you survive those 3 or 4 days and you say, wait a second, there's something very, very special that's going on over here, and I want to overcome that challenge, then you'll see that the chesed, and what I described to you in very, very simple terms about what took place on Purim, that people who cleaned up the vomit, that's a tremendous, tremendous madrega if you think about it. The only way you could be such a selfless person is if you've trained yourself to be selfless. You know, it's very, I could be idealistically very, very selfless, but if I don't train myself to be selfless, and I, to this day, as much as I look at it in awe, those counselors. I think when someone throws up on Purim, my general inclination is to sort of like shirk to the side. And because I didn't have those instincts developed inside of me. And for those people who could develop those holy instincts, then you'll be in a place that's much higher than me. And my students who've gone, one of the greatest nachas that I have is when my students grow greater than me. Which brings me to the next point. And I'm upset at myself that it took me an hour or more to get to this point. I'm getting soft in my old age. Rabotai, I have a Talmud who was a student of mine in Camp Hask, who is now becoming a Dayan here in Eretz Yisrael in a year or two. And he learned Bahasmada at night, and he didn't learn during the day. When he was supposed to watch his campers, he watched his campers. He knows more than me already, Baruch Hashem. And he looked like you guys. His background was like you guys. What am I emphasizing? Emphasizing is that he grew tremendously. He used to speak and learning with me a lot during the summer. The night time is a time that's for learning Torah. It's not for hanging out. You need to relax. You need to get out excess energy. You need to play ball. But the night is a time for learning Torah. And sometimes the Beis Medrash in some summers was filled with a tremendous fire of learning, and that's only dependent on you. And
the
Shekhar. Thank you. The ability to be able to put together Chesed and Torah is so important. I'm going to say even sharper now. Rabosai here. When you hear this, you should fall off your chair. And if you don't fall off your chair, then it's a chisor in our sensitivity. And I don't fall off my chair when I hear this in Kriyas HaTorah, but I should. Do you know that Chesed in the Torah, you hear it every year, Chesed is referred to as arayos. Sexual prohibition. Chesed in Parshas Achrei Mos, the Torah says, Chesed who? It's Chesed. In other words, every once in a while, people violate all of the prohibitions of sexual immorality, and they do it in the name of Chesed. Torah calls arayos sexual or morality chesed, which means that if someone does not join together a life of Torah, and I would add even amelus for Torah. Amelus, I'm not talking about kolo. Rabbi Bina says no one's cursing you to become a Rebbe or a kolo guy. No one's cursing you to do that. What we are saying, though, is every person needs to be committed to the learning of Torah. And if you want to know if your chesed is a real Torah chesed and not an erva chesed, that's if you join it with the learning of Torah at the time that you're not doing chesed. It's so important. There are many people in the world that do chesed. There aren't a lot of people who are b'nai Torah, who are real b'nai Torah who do chesed. Yes, Yosef.
My
We didn't discuss Nagia at all. Okay. The halachas of Nagia are the following. If there is Nagia in a therapeutic, that's the best word I could come up with, a therapeutic context. Therapeutic doesn't mean that your girlfriend had a tough day. That's not a therapeutic context. But if it's a therapeutic context in the sense that therapeutic context means that there is a chole who clearly you are the caregiver and clearly they are a patient, a medical patient, and I'm using my term, I'm trying to be as precise as possible, that you are the caregiver and they are the medical patient, so then in such a case, that qualifies as a therapeutic context. Hence, that is why it's permissible for a woman to be a therapist for male people, which you have as well in camp, because there the context is clearly a therapeutic context. And that's why Nagia is going to be permissible in such an instance. That's the crux of the Hesed.
Sounds like though.
Any other questions? What? About this? Yeah, okay, that's a question. The answer is the following. The prohibition to do Nagia with a erva starts at a particular age. For a boy, it starts at age 9, and for a girl, it starts at age 3. After the age of 3, so then in such a case, one is not supposed to have any physical contact that is outside of a therapeutic context. In my opinion, being in half-pray years, I believe to retain Kedushas Yisrael, that even though it could be that someone would hug a girl with developmental disabilities for absolutely therapeutic intention, I would encourage that be left for women and not for men. If it will be something, if God forbid, a girl with developmental disabilities was in a situation that she had gone through a particular trauma, and the only person that was around was a man, and the only person that would be able to calm her down would be a man. So then in such a case, hugging her, I think there might be room to be makeless. He knows. He's playing with fire. He's playing with an Isur D'oraisa that might be Yohare Glal Yavor. Okay? Yohare Glal Yavor. If he knows that he's doing it entirely in a therapeutic context, in that case, then I think in such a case would be permissible. However, I think that in most cases where there are women around, even though it's a gray area, one should not be more hetzer for themselves. Okay, so I'm so glad that you brought this up. A good friend of mine, Rabbi Yehuda Willig, is going to be the Rav in Camp Half. Rabbi Judah Michel, who's, for instance, camp director this summer, also has experience in these issues. Is Rav Schenker coming back? He's someone else that you could ask as well. You could ask advice. Of course, it will be my pleasure to answer any questions, both through email. Rabbi Willig just emailed me that he wants to get all the material that I didn't get a chance to mention to him that we were having this year, but I'll definitely mention to him also that we have this year. But I'm planning to send him. He's an old friend of mine. He asked me for all the materials that I have from the past, and we're planning to converse about these in Yonim as well. So I would most, and by the way, squeeze review the Willig and Rabbi Schenker. Make them say shir to you. In my days, my last year in the half, we had 35 guys once a week at a Yon shir. Chaval chevra. You could do it. You squeeze Rabbi Willig, he'd love to do it. So you got to squeeze him. You got to squeeze your Rabbeim. Klal Gadol, you got to squeeze a lot out of them. There's so much that they have not only to know whether it's permissible to open a can or not to open a can. Push them, squeeze them for everything you can. And Mirza Hashem, if you squeeze a lot, then you'll squeeze out of the summer a lot of chesed, Bezer Hashem, and a lot of Torah. Yes. Oh, learning on the job? Yes. In other words, you're referring to an old... No. You're referring to a question after my answer, so let me fill everybody in who's hearing this for the first time. When you are working in the care of developmentally disabled, you are a government worker who's working for a company, and you are an employer. And for that reason, you have all the halachos of a poel. A worker is not allowed to learn on the job. In fact, if you could possibly use the expression of mitzvah habo ba'aveira for someone who learns on the job when they're supposed to be working. Therefore, there are times when you're taking care of your camper where the camper's asleep and you've been assigned to watch his camper. He's sleeping in his bed. Of course you could learn if you're sitting in the bunkhouse. But there's a lot of gray area over here. What happens if there's another counselor that's watching him and he's over there and you're over here and you're supposed to be over here? So all those questions I can't answer in the whole confines of the old city of Yerushalayim. You need to ask the people who are on the team. The answer to your question of who could give an appropriate judgment, when I was asked these questions, I would usually refer these questions to the division head or the counselor and so on. Because my job was not to decide what the campers needed. My job was to assess the halakhic problem and to learn with the campers and the counselors, campers and counselors. But my job was not to do that. So I didn't feel that I was always on the field to be able to make that assessment. If you have any questions after you consulted with the division head, after you consulted, and yes, you have the right to say, well, this division has a big background, I'm going to go to the counselor, or this head counselor, something like that. There is a little bit of leeway, but at the end of the day, it needs to be, as the Chazanish wrote, right, that most mistakes in halacha were made not because the Rav made a halakhic mistake, but the mistake wasn't understood. The Messias has to be understood. It has to be clear what exactly are the parameters. Follow up? I think so. Unless there's a reason why that person feels, look, at the end of the day, that they have a responsibility to say, I'm not capable of answering the question. Yes, Daniel. You're not paid at all. But you signed the contract, then you're a worker. You're a worker. If you sign the contract, you're a worker, and along with it come the responsibilities as an employee. Right. Okay. We'll stop here. Beis Hashem. Next time, tomorrow, we'll continue with Tefillah and Yibum.